And we have with us Jill Haskman. How do you say your name? Say it.
Jill Haskman.
And where were you born?
Fairfield, Ohio.
Fairfield? When?
11-13-65.
11-13-65. And what's your permanent address?
29 Citadel Drive, Fairfield, Ohio, 45014.
Okay, I'm doing a book called Attic, and on one side it's going to have your picture, and this will be about 50 other addicts in the book. One side it's going to have your picture, and then the next page is going to be all about you, or more than one page. I'm not sure, I haven't figured that out yet. But what I want on that one page is what you think is important about your life, growing up, what happened, some pain, your understanding of addiction, your spiritual path today, and some unique things that happened to you. Also some things that might help other addicts in denial, reading the book, or society in general about, you know, when we just get real honest about the whole thing, it'll be really cool, the book, because it's a lot of stuff people don't talk about, their feelings. So, you got 90 minutes to talk if you want, 10 minutes, just let it rip from, you can start from
when I was a kid.
When you were a kid.
Yeah. I don't know, it's hard for me talking to a tape recorder, talking to another person about my life.
Do you want a Pepsi or a gin or grapefruit juice or?
Yeah, a little bit so. Let's see. Yeah, I know as a kid it was like, I never felt like I belonged. Even when I was a little kid, most kids would go to the parents' bedroom and crawl in bed with them, to sleep with them at night. And I always used to sleep on the floor next to my parents' bed with the dog, you know, because I didn't feel like I belonged. And I was scared at night. My parents, they went through a lot of changes when I was growing up. It's like my dad became self-employed. Work became the center of their life. It was real hard for me to cope with the people I was around. They were all, I don't know how to say it, they all kind of had money, you know? And I didn't really like that. I didn't like that idea, you know, act rich, we're better than, all that stuff. So I didn't fit in there, and I always tried to hang out with the people from the other end of town, but all I was there was, you know, the little rich kids, you know, she'll buy, no problem. And that was like, I don't know, I just didn't fit in. When I was 13, well, I started using when I was about 11 and got into it real quick. It was like, get high on this one day, get high on something else the next. And I was using real heavy by the time I was 12. When I was 13, I moved down on my own. Moved all the way to Fort Lauderdale. I thought that was worth, you know, just get completely away from it. And that's where I got into some really heavy using and learned a little bit about prostitution to keep myself alive. And it was real hard, you know. And I didn't fit in there. I was always running and scared to death, you know, that somebody was going to find out what I was up to. You know, by the time I was 14, I was shooting dope and still out on my own and trying to figure out where the hell I fit in, and I didn't, you know. I didn't fit in here, and I didn't fit in with the people I wanted to hang out with, and people got to know me, and they didn't feel they liked me anymore. So I decided I'd move back home, and that led to a lot of boarding schools that I got thrown out of, and a lot of confusion. I decided to go, I moved back to Ohio, I guess it's home for me now. But I moved back to Fort Lauderdale. I was back and forth between Ohio and Fort Lauderdale probably about 10 times between the age of 14 till 20. And towards like the end of living down there, I got into a real abusive relationship. You know, the first actually physically abusive relationship. It wasn't just mentally abused, you know. It actually got down to the physical abuse, and I'd want to leave, but I couldn't, you know. I just wasn't capable of it. I was sure that if I was alone, I would die, or that I'd be lonely. And I've been told all my life it's like bad to be alone. You know, that's not cool. You need somebody. You got to have, like, another person. And I still have a problem with that today, but it's getting better a little bit. I went through a lot of hell in Fort Lauderdale. I got beat up. I got arrested. You know, I've been to jails. I've been to institutions. I haven't been dead yet, I don't think. Sometimes I wonder, though, because spiritually I didn't have shit. Emotionally I didn't have nothing either. And I got clean down there the first time. I got clean, and I didn't want it. You know, I went through a treatment program to try to get out of going to prison. And it got me out of going to prison, but it didn't keep me clean because I didn't want it. I was using before I left the treatment program. I got 4 wisdom teeth pulled so that I could use. I found out they give me shots of Demerol if I got my wisdom teeth pulled. So I even found a way to use there. It was like real nuts. And I moved back to Ohio. One thing in Ohio, I'd never shoot dope in Ohio. It was like I tried to keep up an image up there. And I couldn't carry it out. You know, my parents, I got back there and said, I'm supposed to be going to these meeting things. I'm like, I'll handle it. You know, I can deal with it on my own. I know what I'm doing. And if I get too heavy into using and I don't have a problem with alcohol, then I'll go to a meeting, you know. And obviously it didn't work because I was back on the streets and I was back in jail 2 more times. And finally the second time, and the last time I was in jail, actual jail, this guy came up and we made a deal with the judge, you know, let her out, let her try treatment 1 more time. And the only reason treatment really pushed for me that time was because I thought I was in love, you know. And it's funny that I've heard it's like the men that get us here and the women that keep us around, the women in the program, and that's the truth. It was like I got to this program because I wanted to go out with this guy. And it's like if I stayed clean, I could go out with him. And I hung around for a while, and I really didn't, you know if I wanted to be a recovering addict. You know, it scared the hell out of me. It's like, what am I going to do? You know, my time, it's like, I got all this dead time. I don't know what to do. And it was real nuts, you know, at first. You know, I'm still in some denial, some character defects, but then I couldn't see the unmanageability in my life, even though I was in and out of jail. I could not understand how I was powerless. It was just like, I had no grasp on it. It was like, what's this powerlessness? I can handle it, you know. The way I was raised in my family, if you have a problem, you deal with it. You know, you don't sit there and just give up. And to me, admitting powerlessness was, at that time, giving up, you know. And it was real hard to stick with it. But I chose to stick around, and I quit just hanging out with the guy that I was quote-unquote in love with and started meeting some new people, and it was real special, you know, and it started to mean something to me. And I found out that it was like, it wasn't really quitting, it was surrendering to the fact that I can't use. I'm just not real successful in it. And it was a relief. It finally got to the point where it was a relief to be a recovering addict. During that time, you know, when I really came to grips with it, I went through a halfway house for a while, and they didn't understand my addiction there. They understood alcoholism, and they wanted me to be a recovering alcoholic, not a recovering addict. And they refused to allow me to attend the, you know, NA fellowship of my choice, and that was real nuts. It was like I'd have to go to these meetings, and I got thrown out of a couple of meetings because I was an addict, not an alcoholic, and it was like just another place I didn't fit in, you know, and another place I felt a little lonely. And due to the fact that I couldn't conform to what they wanted me to be, they threw me out. And when I got thrown out, I was about I was close to 7 months clean, and I went to prison clean. And I think that's probably about the best thing that's happened to me in my recovery, was going to prison clean and staying clean through it, you know, and trying to work a program down there. It was like I got real, real close to my higher power in prison. You know, they wouldn't let me attend meetings there because of my status. And the psychiatrist, it was real funny. I went in there and I begged him. I said, I gotta go to some meetings, you know. And we went through this list of things to find out whether he thought I was crazy and if I knew President Reagan was president. And he came to the end of it. He goes, look, you look real upset. Let me give you something for your nerves. And I burst out crying. All I wanted to do was go to a meeting. And he, like, couldn't grasp that idea. It was a real strange place, but I met some people down there, and there's a woman there I still write to. She's in there for manslaughter. She's a real neat lady, and I kind of sponsor her by mail to being in there. And I found out there that I could recover any place I'm at, and I could be grateful for being alive and being recovered no matter where I'm at. It's like, before I got in there, it was like, I wasn't grateful for what I had or where I was. It was like I always looked for the bad things, and I didn't look for the positive in anything. And I did a lot of praying in there, and I started looking for the positives. And it taught me that you can find something positive no matter where you're at. And it taught me that things that happen to you in your life that you don't like, you know, you can look at them two ways. You can look at them as some kind of big burden that's been given to you that you just got to live with, or you can look at it as an opportunity to do something different and to learn. And you know, that's where I learned that. And I carry that. Today, that's like one of the most important things in my recovery, is when something happens and I don't like it, of course I throw a fit, you know, at first, and I get angry. But then I realize, hey, you know, this is an opportunity I've been given, and I'm clean today. And if I work through this, there's going to be some kind of gift on the other side of it. And it always works. It's never failed to work. You know, I've had a lot of strange things happen to me since I got out of prison. I came out of there real confused. And it was like, finally, for me, you know, to stay clean for me. There's no more court hanging over my head. So I went through this thing again, you know, that I did when I first got clean. It's, do I want to do this? You know, and it was real hard to do something for myself because I never thought I was worth it. It's like, I'll do anything in the world for anybody but me. Yeah, I'm real good at that. I'm a mother. I like to mother people. I'll baby you. I try to read your needs before you even say them. And that's one of my little games, I guess, or one of my character defects. And I came out of there and it's like, God, this is just for me. It's not for the courts. It's not for anybody. And I finally figured it out, you know, that I'm the only person I can really do this for. And I'm still in the sick relationship I got in early recovery. And that was a lot of pain for me, you know, coming to the realization that I was, like, not a complete person in who I was. And had no idea who I was or my wants, and come to accept the fact that I have nothing to give to a relationship. Because, like, since I got clean, I got all these wonderful things to give. And it's like, I want to share them with somebody, and it's like, this will just be perfect, and it'll be so beautiful and wonderful. But it wasn't like that. We were two half people, and two half people make a whole, but, like, without each other, we were real lost, you know? I was like, Where do I begin? Where does he end? There was nothing in there. It was always my name and his name, Jill Ann, you know. And it was real hard to say, hey, I want to be just Jill, and I want to be, when I talk to somebody, I don't want to always have to explain where this other person's at. Because to explain myself, I had to explain where this guy was at. And it got real nuts, you know, and it got real sick. And it wasn't physically abusive, and it's the first time I've ever ended anything with love instead of anger. It was like I've quit jobs with anger. I've ended relationships, all of them, friendships, lovers, anything, with anger. And this is the first thing I learned how to end with love, and it was really special. It was like, I love you, and I love me, and it's just, it's not working, and I'm not happy, you're not happy. Of course, it took like about 4 or 5 months of being miserable with each other to get to that point, you know, and to keep trying all the different ways, you know. It's like, well, I'm willing, I'm desperate. I get real willing when I'm desperate, but I started noticing like that willingness was only there when I was desperate. And I noticed that in a lot of things in my recovery. It's like I work real hard on a daily inventory. You know, that's one of the most important things for me in my program is my daily inventory and my morning, you know, meditating. And I spend a lot of time in the morning just meditating and praying, you know, and just looking at today and trying to get some kind of input before I leave the house, something recovered before I have to go out there. Otherwise my day's shot, but if I blow it off for one day, I blow it off for 10 days, and then I get desperate, and then I get willing, and it's like, this is crazy, but it's just me, you know, I can't beat myself to death over it. I found out that I'm human. That's real nice. I either thought I was like good or bad, and I'm finding out that there's like this middle ground, and it's called human, and I'm in there, you know, and I don't like it sometimes, because I always loved extremes. It was either everything was going excellent or everything was miserable. And I don't want to be mediocre. I don't want to be in the middle. And today I'm kind of liking it sometimes. And other times it's like I'm exactly where I never wanted to be. You know, just looking for some balance. And when I find it, like I'm starting to find it here this morning, which is, it was real special. I got some time to myself and just sitting outside and just doing my morning meditation, just clearing my mind, looking for something. You know, I got a real clear mind this morning. Usually there's all kinds of things coming in there, you know, like the phone will ring or, you know, people will call or I'll have all these nutty things I have to do during the day, all the things related to work, and I can't really do it. But this morning I was really able to clear my mind. You know, push all the bullshit out and get a little bit of serenity and a little bit of open mind in the sense. And I'm feeling real good today about that. I don't know what else to say. I'm a little lost here. Like, I don't know. I just know that if I stay clean, I got a chance today. You know, no matter what happens, if I stay clean, I got a chance. And if I use, I don't. Because I feel like this is, my last chance in recovery. I'm only 22 and I had a hard time grasping death, you know. And I had to look back and my brother died at 18 from this disease a year before I got clean. And it's like looking at that and facing the reality that, you know, he died because of this disease, and if I go back out and use, in my opinion, he died in vain. You know, it's like he died for me, and everything happened the way it was supposed to happen, not the way I wanted it to, but it's hard to say, but I'm real grateful for his death today, because I wouldn't be where I'm at. You know, I miss him, and I love him, and, you know, I say hi to him in my prayers every night when I thank God for the day, but it's like I know that I'd still be out there using, and I'm more than likely to be dead. If he had died, and I guess that helped me to understand what they say when some people have to go back out there and die for me to live, you know, because I ignored that because I didn't want to face the fact that my brother died for me, and that was real nuts, but I'm okay with it today. I'm learning to accept that I needed to go through all the bullshit in my past and all the bullshit I've been through every moment of my life just to be where I'm at today. And if I stay clean and hang in there, I got a lot more gifts ahead of me. You know, I've already made, it seems like, 180-degree turnaround. And I'm still a newcomer, man. I've only been clean for like 17, 18 months. You know, right in there. And I'm still a newcomer. And, you know, there's so many more things that I want out of this program. And I want out of my life and out of myself that, like, if I use today, I'll never have them. I won't see them. Because I'm going to go out there and die if I use. Because I feel like if I pick up now, it's because I know that I want to die. And I have a feeling that that's why I do today. But I want to stay clean. I'm done. Can I push this button?
Sure. You want to laugh again?
No. I'm done.